Hello, hello, hello. You're back. I'm back. It's time for another episode of Talking Bollocks. Hello, Chief Bollock Talker here, Howard H. Smith. Thank you for joining me. Lead singer in UK thrash band Acid Rain. I do this podcast. I do stand-up as the character Keith Platt and also myself doing that in Leeds coming up on Friday, May the 3rd, if you're around. That's at Unleashed Comedy. Have a look for that. Also, I present, I host the official Motorhead podcast, The Motorcast. And I also host a regular weekly football podcast called The Reducer. Look for that in your podcast apps. If you want, if you like football, if you can't get enough me, then you can also sign up at patreon.com/ Howard H. Smith. And there you can dive into, well, what is coming up to in September. It will be 7 years of content, 6 years of content, over 6 years of content. There's loads to go at, basically, is what I'm saying. So you can fill your boots with that. And a few people signed up over the last month, which is very good. Thank you very much, guys. And one person signed up for a day and then fucked off. And I wondered what I must have done to offend them. And then in the exit survey, they put joined wrong Patreon. I don't know how you do that. Is there another Howard H. Smith out there? There isn't, by the way. So, there is somewhere, but not on Patreon. So, don't know what my ugly face and me, a picture of me stage diving, I don't know how you click on that as the wrong one, but, you know, thanks for the $5 for your mistake. yeah, great. Thank you very much. Weirdly, that person who signed up has, you know, contributed towards my Patreon more than a lot of you listening. I'm not having a go. I'm not having a pop. That's fine. I don't support many people on Patreon either. So, you know, accepted. But I'm just saying, maybe mistakenly sign up for 1 month if you feel like it. There is a link in the description to the podcast. I'm not going to go on about it anymore. I'm going to get straight into this episode's breakdown of the clickbait. Yes, I'm not even going to call it news anymore. I'm just going to call it clickbait. Here we go. Now, a lot of this, I'm just going to read you the headline. There's clearly no story there. So first, Sebastian Bach on reunion with Skid Row. Yes, it's that again. We're back here. Those of you who remember way back when I did a live podcast with Godless, he said that Skid Row would get back together within a year. That was about 6 years ago. We message each other every time Sebastian Bach says, "We should get together and do some shows again, man." And every time the rest of Skid Row go, "No." And the headline is Sebastian Bach on reunion Skid Row. "The only thing standing in our way is the business side of things." Oh, is that all, Seb? You mean the money? Yeah, well, that's pretty fucking key, isn't it? The only thing. That's literally like having a car with no engine and saying the only thing that's stopping us doing the Monte Carlo rally is not having an engine in the car. I mean, you know, we're ready to go. We're ready to go. We are good to go. I mean, apart from the engine, apart from having an engine, we are ready to go. Dear me, the amount of years that guy has been in the business and yet still he appears to be absolutely clueless. Or just thick. Who knows? Who knows? Next, clickbait headline. That is not a story. Ex-Morbid Angel frontman David Vincent. "I don't touch a drop of alcohol before I get on stage." Yeah, that's one sentence that is lifted out of basically a paragraph. And that's the most interesting thing there is in it. And it's the whole paragraph is about that one line. No point in reading it. Move on. Next absolute non-story. Mark Tremonti on possibility of new Creed music. "We'll see what happens." Yeah, brilliant. You know, basically, he's asked a question, he babbles on and on. That's the conclusion. No story. Next non-story. Kerry King on launching solo project 40 years into his career. "It's a lot more difficult than I thought." Yeah, there you go. I bet it was, Kerry. Next non-story. This is what I love. Robert Trujillo on Ozzy Osbourne deserves to be in Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as solo artist. There's nothing really to read there, is there? I mean, why would you read that article? That is absolutely everything you need to know right there. No article. That's it. Here's not an article. Sum 41's Derek Whibley celebrates 10 years of sobriety. Yeah, don't need to read the article. Well done, Derek. Really happy for you. But not a story. I mean, did we have one when he was 9 years? Did we have one? We're going to have one when it's 11 years. Next non-story, Bruce Dickinson's bassist Tanya O'Callaghan says, Iron Maiden singer is a great guy to work with. Thank you, Tanya. No need to read that because there's nothing to bloody read. It's Seb Back again. Seb Back performs Skid Row classics at Brazil's Summer Breeze Festival. Does he? Really? Seb Back is performing covers. What a surprise. Gene Simmons' band performs Kiss, Led Zeppelin and Motorhead classics at Brazil's Summer Breeze Festival. Yeah, same festival, another person doing covers. This one I especially like. Megadeth visits Astronomical Observatory in Chile. That's right. And that's it. Apart from this weird sentence at the beginning, Professor Reggie Almeida of Renzo Gracie TN Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu School in Tennessee, who has been travelling with Megadeth on the band's recent tours, has uploaded video of the Dave Mustaine fronted outfits. I don't know any of you listening who didn't know this, but Megadeth, yeah, Megadeth is fronted by a guy called Dave Mustaine. Hello, me! It's the real me! And he used to be in Metallica, in case you didn't know that, for fuck's sake. And he's got his jiu-jitsu teacher with him on the road, because why wouldn't you? Now, we're on to actual stories. And moving on from Gene, let's have a story, shall we? From Pearl Jam's Matt Cameron. This is transcribed. Matt Cameron's on a show. He's asked a question. I was in a neighbourhood Kiss cover band when I was 13 or 14, something like that. We played our local high school keggers, whatnot, and my dad was friends with the head of the stagehand union in San Diego. So when Kiss was playing there, it was during their live tour, we got to go and see Kiss do a sound check at San Diego Sports Center. So I brought the two guys that I was in a Kiss band with, Tim and Dave Mahoney, to the sound check, and we brought our photo album from our stupid Kiss cover band. My mum made my costume, Tim's mum made his costume. We built these rickety plywood platforms in Tim's garage. We made flash pots out of coffee cans and a light socket with a little flash powder inside of it. It was janky, low rent, horrible. So anyways, we took this photo album to meet Kiss and we met Paul Stanley. We got a photo with him, and so we were sort of like, hey man, we're in a Kiss cover band. Here's our stupid little photo album. Cut to, like, I don't know, 4 to 6 months later, we get a cease and desist letter from Kiss's management. O'Coin Management. And we were big Kiss fans, so Kiss used to put their logo from O'Coin Management on their albums. So we were all excited when we got the letter. Whoa, we're getting a letter from O'Coin Management. We've made it. And it was a cease and desist from Kiss. Is there anything more Kiss? Is there anything more Kiss? Is there any more Kiss story you've ever heard than a bunch of school children who had a Kiss cover band receiving a cease and desist letter? This is approximately 1977. Oh yeah, they have been cunts for decades. Litigious cunts. And just priceless. Absolutely priceless. Cameron said, it was because I think we called our Kiss cover band Kiss. We didn't really think ahead there. I mean, okay, fair enough, I get it. And to the letter of the law, which is what literally they received, yeah, I get it. But seriously, fuck off. Right, next up. For your benefit, right, I did this so you don't have to. Motley Crue shares official music video for Dogs of War, so I watched and listened to the new Motley Crue song. Now, for a start off, the video is very well done. It's all CGI, and the band are like Dogs of War, and you know, they're all sort of, you know, tattooed, but it's basically them, but it's caricatures of them. Strangely, Vince Neil's character isn't fat. Vince Neil's character doesn't look like he's got half a beach ball up his t-shirt. He's strangely lithe and slim. But anyway, in the video, that is, in the computer-generated image of him, that's how he looks. Maybe that's who he sees when he looks in the mirror. But anyway, Dogs of War has been released, and, you know, they reckon it was like, you know, it's old school versus new meets new school, blah, blah, blah. The word bastards appears quite early on. The riff is pretty anonymous. The production is, in the true tradition of Motley Crue, horrifically radio friendly. It's supposed to be, it's supposed to sound heavy, yet it has no heaviness whatsoever. It has no gravity at all. There's just, it's absolutely heartless. It's such a cold, clinical attempt at metal production. It's ballless and soulless completely. The chorus is basically, don't let the bastards get you down, which they just seem to, and in true Motley Crue style, the video, the song is 4 minutes and 9 seconds. The chorus has got to be repeated, I don't know, 6 to 8 times. I mean, if you like it, good for you. I thought it was fucking hideous. Anyway, two other things for you to have a look at. Firstly, Sepultura's new drummer, Grayson Neckerman, shares drum cam video of Inner Self from Buenos Aires. Now, dig this out if you want. I'm going to leave a link in the description. It's the reason I'm doing that is, A, it's great footage. B, it's a real lesson to drummers out there. Just watch it. There is hardly any fills. You know, there is hardly any fills during the verses, during the choruses. He is just nailing down the rhythm, and that's it. He's just driving the song. That is it. And it's a great example of that. But what is really weird is, on 4 minutes, he changes drumsticks. I don't know why. If anybody, I've asked a few drummers that I know. They don't know why either. Grayson, if you're listening, let me know. And finally, just want to flag up, there is a new Flotsam and Jetsam single out called I Am The Weapon. There is a new album on its way, and it's called I Am The Weapon, and it's coming out. It's due later in the year. Sorry, I thought there was a date, but no, apparently not. Oh, yes. Oh, no. Fucking hell, this is brilliant, isn't it? More information about I Am The Weapon will be revealed on May the 24th. So there you go. That's good to know, isn't it? Well, that's just about enough of me and the lack of news and just general clickbait. It's now time for the interview. Those of you who remember way back will remember my interview with James Murphy, the first one. And James recorded, mixed the first Dath album, D-A-A-T. Well, God, it spelled the description in it. So, Dath, fucking legendary band, very, very cool. Third album, it's been years since the second one. In this interview, firstly, you're going to hear me blow Isle away with the fact that I have a copy of the first album on CD that was sent to me by James, which is still one of the coolest things a guest has ever done for me. And, well, I say guest, James is more of a friend these days, but also I mentioned that I haven't got the new Dath album yet. It's nothing to do with the label. I say that they seem to be guarding it, and, you know, for some reason I haven't got it yet. I just hadn't looked properly in the Metal Blade portal. It's right there. I'd missed it. So that's my bad. Sorry, Metal Blade. Don't mean to throw you under the bus in any way. So, after all that jibber jabber, you can watch the video on the Talking Bollocks YouTube channel, or you can stay right here and listen to us chatting not many days ago. The man, the myth, the legend, Isle, welcome to the Talking Bollocks podcast.
Thanks for having me.
A little bit of background. I have a good friend who I was label mates with back in the day called James Murphy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And the first time James came on the podcast, we had a long old chat, and then offline we had a we got into it, and I happened to mention, I dropped the name Dath, and he explained his involvement with the first album, and look what that lovely man sent me.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, the original.
Yeah, man, that's like the 10 track version of the album pre-Roadrunner. Really cool.
Yes, very, very cool. It's one of my prized metal possessions.
Dude, I don't even have a copy of
Well, send me your
that.
address. I can send you a copy.
You have more than one?
No, seriously. Look, this is yours if you want it, man.
No, it's yours. The records, they're no longer mine after I finish them. But that's awesome.
Yeah, but very much the same with I feel very much the same. When our last album came out, I said to everybody, like about a month before it came out, look, just this month, just I know we've had it a long time, but just listen to it, because in a month's time it's not yours anymore, and you won't be able to listen to it cleanly, because when you hear it, you will also get everybody else's opinions will be flying through your head, and this is before it comes out. That's when you really get to sort of treasure it, and it's just yours.
Exactly.
So speaking of which, your first single came out 14 months ago. Has this been a kind of frustrating period?
No, not at all. So, the record wasn't done. We weren't planning on getting signed that early on in the
All
process. Like
right.
that, things moved a lot faster than we expected. So, yes, if the record had been done and we waited 14 months, then
Yeah.
yes, but that's not what happened. And we had the choice of waiting, but to release, when the record was done. But we felt like fans have been so cool to us over the years. They're the ones who kept us alive, and we had told them we're going to be releasing something. No, we're not. We're going to be releasing something. No, we're not. For so long that it just felt like we can't keep doing this. We have something that we're pretty sure they're going to love. We have to put it out. Also, because we have a new lineup, and those fans that were so supportive were starting to get super skeptical. So we had to put something out, in my opinion, to make them happy and to also, keep their confidence that we know what we're doing. And that it's gonna be okay. So
Yeah.
yeah, so basically what happened was we did three songs. We did those when we were first like courting Krim, and seeing if we could work together. We didn't even have a full lineup yet, but the whole attitude was we're gonna do this no matter who's involved, label, no label, we're just doing this. And so Metal Blade got involved. Like before we even recorded those three songs, they just heard that we were back together and they already started hitting us up. And then once we finished those three songs, suddenly we were talking to, all the usual suspects. And we went with Metal Blade for lots of reasons. But then we had to finish the record. So that took as long as it takes. So
Yeah.
no, it wasn't frustrating at all.
No.
But
No, it sounds
the
like
whole
it.
thing's a bit of a miracle, honestly.
Yeah, sounds like a lovely position to be in.
Yeah, I'm happy with it. It way better and faster than I anticipated. So I'm
Well,
good.
the Metal Blade connection as well is the one thing I always say about Metal Blade is that bands who sign to Metal Blade never seem to leave Metal Blade.
Yeah, right.
It's a freaky thing. I've had Brian on here a few times, and it amazes me. It really does amaze me that there's never anybody leaving that label.
They're one of the good ones. I've known them for a long time, and their reputation plus my own experience verifies that reputation over more than a decade of working with them in various different ways. So
Yeah.
like I didn't go into this didn't go into this uninformed. They're definitely the label we wanted to be with for, you know, those reasons that we're talking about, among others.
Well, also, I mean, now there's quite the history there, you know. I mean, if they were a bunch of crooks, somebody would have found out by now. They've been around since forever.
Yeah, and they care. Like that's I mean, that's a big one right there is there's no corporate overlords who don't care about metal or anything like that. They're a true independent label where what they put out and who you think they are is exactly who they are. Like it's a bunch of metalheads who actually give a shit about moving metal forward and like preserving it and growing the genre, like all the right reasons.
Well, and the proof is the fact that, you know, they knew you were back together before you'd put anything out, and they were ahead of everybody else getting in touch and saying, hey, what are you doing? Because that's what cool labels do.
Yeah, and that's kind of you know, lots of people ask me, you know, how do you get signed by a label? And you know, this I've been on I've had several record deals at this point. Some great, some terrible, some whatever. I've like shopped, I've been approached, and the thing that people say, like the general wisdom is let them come to you, which is really tough for young bands to like to accept because the patience factor, you know, that requires you to be patient. But it's true. The times that I've gone chasing it have been when I've gotten the worst record deals and the worst experiences. The best has always been when they've come to me.
Well, the thing is, you're starting from a position of strength. It's like, you know, that if they're coming to you right off the bat, you have power in that, you know, in that negotiation. Whereas if you're banging down the door, it's, you know, you're basically saying, you know, we're looking for a label, we need a label, we need a deal. It's just two different ways of looking at it.
Yeah, and you're kind of trying to jumpstart their fan process. So you want them to actually be a fan of the band. And even though it's their job to become fans of the band, there's still an organic thing that has to happen. Like they need to hear about the band, they need to be doing their own thing, come across it, like come to their own conclusion that they should talk to this band. It has to be their idea. If you go hitting them up and then they start looking into it. Yeah, it might be that they are blown away, but it's less likely. It's a lot less likely. And you're skipping those steps that they need to do on their own to legitimately, you know, with all their being, want to work with you.
Well, believe it or not, you're talking to somebody who actually got signed to a record deal by sending an unsolicited demo tape through the post.
Look, it
So
happened. It can happen.
it can happen. It turns out we were the only band the label ever signed from an unsolicited demo tape, but it can happen. But you used a phrase there that I'm really interested in that I want to dig into a bit more because it's kind of where I come from as well, which is, you were talking about the label that, you know, that cares about the genre, but also growing the genre and moving the genre forward, which for me is, you know, my genre is thrash metal, and there's a lot of people putting thrash metal albums out, trying to look like Creator when they were 19, and sounding like Creator when they were 19, and it's kind of like, look, guys, that's great, but for me, we've got to be moving forward. Everything's always got to be moving forward. We've got to progress. And you're kind of one of the sort of touchstones for that in your kind of music. I mean, your latest single, just yeah, I like about a minute and a half in, I was like, this is this I've missed this. I've missed this kind of heavy confusion, is what I call it initially.
Thank you.
It's
Heavy
like,
confusion.
what the fuck time signature is that again? And that's no, that's not all. Is that orchestral? It is. God, is there not enough going on right now? It's just like, yeah, cool.
Hopefully in a good way.
Absolutely. Like I said, yeah, heavy confusion.
Yeah, I mean, We definitely, what's cool about the way things work now is the way that the lineup works and where we're at in our lives and career and everything, we're able to keep this 100% pure because there's nothing pulling us in any direction. Like, no band members are pulling for it to be anything because everyone has something going on outside of the band that's important.
Yeah.
The label doesn't interfere. What's the worst that can happen, right? Like, we've already experienced that. So it's very free to just be a pure expression, and that means going hard, going hard with with all of the musical stuff that we want to do, which ends up being, yeah, kind of confusion, I guess.
Yeah, but in like you said, in a good way. And so I totally agree with you as well. There's something you said there about everybody having something outside the band that's crucial, that's important. It's you only realize that with age, because of course when you're younger, it's like it's the band, it's only the band, it's going to be the band and nothing else. And that's ultimately too much pressure. But when everybody has something else that is equally important in their lives and they come together to do the band, I think there's more joy in it.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, there's a certain amount of dedication you need to have, but if it's 100% for you, it means that it's going to take 100% of your insecurities, 100% of your pressure, 100% of your neuroses, like 100% of the bad stuff too. It's going to be a lot harder to have clarity over whether you're making good, honest decisions or you're being swayed by other people. Like, it's way harder to have a good perspective on things that way, which is really, really important because it's a confusing business.
Dedication, good. Obsession, bad.
You should be obsessed with the music part of it.
And speaking of being obsessed with music, there was a good 12, about 12 years there where you were obsessed with everybody else's music. There was a lot of producing going on. Love the Misery Index stuff.
Oh, thanks.
And Charred Walls of the Damned.
But I didn't produce that.
Oh, didn't you?
No, I think you're confusing me for Jason Sukoff. But
No, it's I admit I'm only wikiing it, but it's in you. It's in.
it's possible that I like assisted him on it.
Ah,
Dude,
right. Okay.
we worked on so many records together
Yeah.
that it's entirely possible that I assisted him on it. That, like, I
Well,
like
look,
mix engineered or
it's only
something.
Wikipedia.
No, I'm starting to remember now. I think because I feel
Right.
like I remember something with, like, files getting imported at the wrong sample rate or something on that one. But, like, I probably mix engineered on that, like, did, like,
Right.
mix
Yeah.
notes and laid samples for Jason and helped him out.
Yeah.
But I think we've did so
So,
many that sometimes it goes away. But Misery Index I did do for sure.
You were prolific in those 12 years. I mean, you were just going from album to album to album to album. And was there a kind of element of burnout at the end of that? Was it just kind of like, right, I'm done with that for now?
No, so I don't know if Wiki has this. So I quit producing in 2014 to start URM,
Right.
URM Academy,
Yeah.
who does Nail the Mix and Riff Hard. So, like, I started producing in like 99, 2000, really for this band, because I wanted a way to not have to go to local studios. And that kind of led to, by the time this band went on hiatus, I got the gig with Jason in Florida, where I stayed for a few years. And so, yeah, I worked on a bunch of records with him And it I started to get burned out on the process, and I started to feel like this is not what I got into this for. Because like I've always had grandiose visions for things and wanted to
Good.
make an impact, and I just felt like what I was doing there was it's great if that's what you want to do, but it's not what I wanted to do, and I felt like it was a waste of what I've got to contribute. Because lots of those types of things that you need for engineering, like that, there are other people who are better at it, who are more mentally suited for it, like less ADD, or more like they think more like computers. Like I know some people who are just wizards with that stuff, and they love it too. So, I realized somewhere around 2012, actually, by 2012, that I needed to figure out something else and like do something that would make an impact. And by 2013 and 14, I figured it out. And so I basically quit producing completely to start URM, because I feel like you can only really do so many things. And you've seen so many businesses started by musicians or producers that have failed because they weren't willing to put everything into it to get it off the ground, that I just realized that like you can't I can't this isn't going to work if I keep taking records and like taking 6 weeks off of the company to like work on a record. And if I don't just make this decision, there's always going to be a record that is going to be like, well, I should just do this one. And then I'll work on it. And then another one will come up and I'll be like, oh man, I really should just do this one. And then we'll never get off the ground. So I just made the choice. And yeah, we're still going. So I think it was a really good decision.
Yeah, and it also seems like it's kind of unusual from to see a musician. Well, not unusual, but that you went from helping bands realize the best productions they could for their albums, and you then went to kind of helping musicians in general, and creating something for other people to benefit from. It seems like quite a I don't say charitable, it's the wrong word. I'm searching for the word, but my ADHD brain can't find it. But it seems like, you've given a lot of yourself to helping other people within the industry. And now you're coming back to kind of doing something a little bit for yourself, nurturing the artist in you, the need to get that creative gene out.
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate. Yeah, for sure. I mean, URM was started for a few different reasons, but one of the big ones was to help move the genre forward, because there was this reality at the time where things were getting kind of dark in the industry. Like there was this talk that labels were not going to exist. After a while, like budgets were in the toilet. However, home recording was also in the toilet because people didn't know how to do it. So you would have bands really, really skimping on going to producers, or like only getting a producer to like finish their record and doing things themselves because they had to. But they didn't know how to do it. And so the quality of things was just getting pretty rough. And with record sales going down, that just seemed like a really scary trajectory to be going in. If fans can get everything for free and the quality of what you're putting out is not that good, and there's no more budgets going into making it better, then what? Like, was it just gonna like die? Because that's It's just going to get really bad. Like, where's this going? It was scary. And so I felt like, well, what can I do What can I do with my expertise? What I'm actually good at, like what I know, and it just URM kind of like checked off all the boxes. So the idea was to help raise the bar, like do our part to help raise the bar, and also to not let the art of metal production just like die with the people who have done it, because so far, like every other genre of music, pretty much you can go to a school, a university, and like learn it formally. So, but somehow the most difficult style of production in the world has been like guarded like it's a CIA secret, which is not cool, because what happens once the once you get into a situation like we got into in the late 2000s,
Laptop metal.
yeah, man, it gets rough. So I just felt like someone had to do it. No one else was doing it. May as well be me. So
Awesome.
here we
Awesome.
are.
And I couldn't agree more. And you're right about those, those little secrets. One of which I learned during the recording of our last album. I mean, it's so secret, I don't even want to say it on here, but I mention it when we get off. But there is it's kind of like it, there's also time is a factor here. It's not just money, it's not just knowledge, it's time. For me, the more time you spend on something, as long as you've got a deadline, got to have a deadline,
Oh, yeah.
the better it can be, rather than, rushing stuff out. And I think that's as much of a factor as having the skills in the first place is not accepting what's good enough and making sure that it is as good as it can be.
To a degree. Like I agree with you to a degree there, but there's a sweet spot, because too much time. I know you said you have to have a deadline. But yeah, having too much time is negative also, because it's too
No,
much. You can like
paralysis by
iterate,
analysis.
yeah, or just keep making new versions and new versions, and it's not getting better. You can go crazy. So the right amount of time is what matters, I think.
Oh, I completely agree. I had Ol from Evile on here. And he was saying by the time they get to recording the album, he said, I've actually recorded each song at least 20 or 30 times before we get the final. I'm happy with the final version. And that just absolutely blew my mind. I was like, right, if you can work like that and you can realize it. But like for me, I would just, yeah, that would just burn my brains to pieces.
Yeah, something like that. I understand what he's saying. Maybe not 20 or 30, but still, I mean, sure, it's happened.
So the rest of the album, I have not heard the album yet. I've heard the singles like everybody else. The album is being guarded like a military secret by Metal Blade, which I love, by the way, because most Metal Blade artists, I would have had the album by now and I could have listened to it, but not Dath. And I think that's really cool. It really is like, sort of like curate's egg, first time in 13 years, and it's being closely guarded. But I've only heard the singles, and like I said, I read some quotes from you. I think they were from you. Regarding how you wanted this to sound, and that it came together pretty quickly, that the orchestration, the melodies, I mean, yeah, what I've heard so far has got me genuine. I turned 54 on Tuesday, and I am as
Happy birthday.
excited. Thank you very much. I'm as excited as a 14-year-old metalhead about the album, about your album coming out. I cannot wait to hear it. And that's just from the few singles I've got. Have you, what's to come? What is on there?
Hopefully more great songs. It, so there's the thing that's really, really important for me on a record is that the you space it and you sequence it in a way to where it's interesting throughout. So when we have a thing where you shouldn't be able to take one part of one song and put it on another one and have it work. Like that might happen inevitably, but you should minimize that potential, at least for us. Like that's not true for all bands, but for us, each song should have its own unique identity, and its own journey and its own, and be interesting for its own reason and awesome for its own reason and be like true in its own reason. And I think, like, I think we did that. So, like, if you're liking what you've heard, I think it's more of that, but not like it. Like, every song's pretty different. But it's my favorite tracks are haven't been released yet. So,
Well, that's good to hear. I when you say sequence, I always think of like track listing, and I think once you've basically if you get that right, my feeling is that once somebody puts the album on, it's like, right, I'm in. I can't act. I have to finish this. You know, I'm not going to put two or three songs on and then go and listen to something else. It's like, no, I have to do the whole album, and I have to. Yeah, I'm not a playlist guy. I'm really want to get the track listing right, and you want to take people on that journey, not just through a song, but you want to take them on that whole journey through the album. And that's why you put certain songs in certain places, and you know, and they work off each other, and that's really old school. So I'm excited to hear that.
It's old school, but I mean, at the same time, they should all work on playlists. So it's like, I think you've got to do both. Or for us, it's important to do both. Like that you should be able to hear each song on its own and it be awesome and then also work in context. So like honestly, like I think that any one of the songs could have been a single. I mean, obviously there's some that lend themselves a bit more. Like Hex and Ending is very much a single, like in its DNA. Some of the other ones are a little less like traditional, but they, I feel like, you know, metal's pretty wild, like as far as what passes for a single. So I feel like any one of them we could have picked and I would have been confident to go with it. So that's really, really important, like when making this stuff happen, that each song like stands up on its own, like no filler. That's an old school thing we don't want to keep is filler songs, you know.
Very much so. Speaking of which, did you overwrite for this album at all and whittle it down, or was it just purely, right, as each song comes, we perfect it, we finish it, that's one down, and that's that.
I don't consider it overwriting. I think that you have to come up with a lot of stuff to be able to figure out what's good. And you're not always gonna be at your best. So if you start a bunch of songs, it's not possible that they're all gonna be your best. Like there, out of the batch of songs, there's gonna be the worst. I mean, the best is gonna be the middle. And so if you keep getting rid of the worst and keep and have a few different rounds of coming up with batches of songs, only take the best. Like, I don't consider that overwriting. I just consider that to be the process. Like, there's no great songs that we didn't pick. And also there's no songs that we finished that we didn't pick. So nothing made it past the first few ideas, that didn't get picked. So I think we're very quick about killing off the bad ones.
It's kind of weird. I don't know what your experience is, but I always kind of feel that they kind of reveal themselves,
Yeah.
like somebody at some point, someone says, I don't know, I'm not really feeling this. And at least two other people go, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, let's ditch this. In fact, I'm just back from tour and we were playing, whilst we were playing a song, our bass player was shouting into our guitarist's ear, we should drop this for tomorrow night. And it was like, we were all in the dressing room afterwards going like, yeah, totally. Yeah, it's just one of those things that you feel.
Yeah.
Although, yeah,
You just
and when
know.
and it's the same in writing, isn't it? You just get that feeling. It's just, yeah.
You
And
get that
I,
feeling and you should listen to that feeling. That's the thing is I think that a lot of it's more on the amateur side of things, but and I'm saying this because I've talked to so many people through you, Armin Riffhard. People
I know what you're
will,
gonna say. I know
they
what you're
will
gonna say.
stick,
Go on.
that they'll stick to things that suck just because they feel like they have to.
They try
They,
and save the song. They try and say, and you're like, look, just kill your darlings. You can't save them.
It's not a darling, it's a shitty song, but like
Yeah.
there's a difference between finishing a song that takes a while versus saving a bad one. They're two different things, and I think people confuse them a lot. Some songs take a while to put together, like Ascension took like 6 months, whereas Hex Unending took 4 hours. So you can never pre you can never predict like how long it's going to take, but you have to be able to distinguish between I'm working on something worth working on versus I'm trying to salvage something that sucks.
I completely agree. There's one song in our entire catalogue that we put out when I was 19, and it is that there is one song in the entire catalogue, and it was a song that we tried saving, and I was against putting it on the album, but everybody, I was outvoted, and to this day,
Yep.
it makes my skin itch listening to it.
I understand. You're lucky it's only one.
Point taken. Point taken. Well, look, I'm not going to take up any more of your time. I know you're a busy guy, and I'm just look. I can't wait for the new album. Thank you so much for sparing your time and coming on. I really do appreciate it. And
My pleasure.
seriously, it's got you literally, virtually got your name on it. If you want it, just send me your
No,
send me your details.
it really is yours. I like, I think it does more good in the
Okay.
world.
Okay,
Because
cool.
like, if you were to send it to me, I'd be happy for like a minute and then I'd lose it. So it's better with you.
You'd be like, oh yeah, cool. I've got that now. Think.
Yeah, what do I do with it?
Oh shit, where'd I put it?
Yeah.
Well, look, thanks for all the great music. I'm really looking forward to the album, and thanks a lot for coming on, and best of luck. Are you going to be playing any live dates?
I sure hope so. I mean, we have booking, so we're working on putting that together right now.
Awesome. Well, I'm based in London, and if you come by this borough, I shall pop in and say hello.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome, man. Thank you once again.
Thank you so much. Have a great one.
Cheers. You too, dude.
Take it easy. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that. Really cool chat, and The Deceivers is awesome. I am absolutely loving the new album. It is absolutely, it's my jam. And it has to be said that I just love the fact that this band have always not broken the rules, but just as you probably picked up during the interview there, it's all about pushing music forward, pushing the genre forward, doing something different, originality. And as regular listeners will know, I'm a big fan of all that. So if you like originality, it's heavy as hell. I guess it is death metal, but you know me, not a big fan of death metal, but I make exceptions now and again. Last year it was for As in Hell, and this year, well, Dath. It's just, very cool. I'm very excited. Probably going to be in my top albums of the year. So, that is all from this episode. That is all the bollocks that I can talk for one episode. I hope you've enjoyed this stay in my company. I mean, I do mean that as well. I really do genuinely mean that. Sometimes I get messages from people saying, oh, you know, listen to this at work. Thanks, help me get through a couple of hours and stuff like that. And it genuinely means a lot. It really does. However you consume your podcast, whether it is, you know, at work, underground, in jail, at war, flying through the air, you know, I don't know, whatever you're doing right now, as long as it's not beating off, it's cool. Listen to the podcast. And share it. Fucking hell, share it. And as I've said before as well, there is a distinct lack of reviews in the last few years. If you wouldn't mind slinging a review in, that would be great. 5 stars or no stars, please. Either total adulation or slag me off. It's entirely up to you. But if you just happen to be passing, whether it's, you know, whether it's just on your podcast app, because I know a lot of apps let you review shows, if it's on iTunes or anything like that, great. Yeah, I mean, I'd appreciate it, you know, that'd be cool. Do me a solid. Yeah, anyway, that's it. That's all I got for you, folks. Be back very soon. Got some really cool interviews. Got some old school interviews. I've got an interview coming up with somebody that nobody's done an interview with for years that I'm really chuffed with. And it's about an hour and a half. And we just chew the fat. Had so much fun doing it. And there's two or three already in the bag. There's a couple more on the way. Fans of hardcore are going to be very happy in the near future. And fans of metal, fans of just music in general. So if you weren't going to stay subscribed, then, you know, I suggest you do. And I suggest you tell everybody you know. Please. Thanks. Catch you next time.